The Digivolution!
Is that Ben Renning?
Did you see?
Did you hear?
Did you know it was coming?
Our Digidestiny
starts today.
Let me hear you say...
Digimon!
Woo! Even I felt nerdy after that.
Ho, 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 and a bottle of Nog. Merry Christmas and welcome to...
Christ.
Welcome to Christ.
Welcome to Christ. Christ Mass.
Welcome to Couch Lock, and also welcome to Podmon, and welcome to Phantom Nonsense. It's a big old Christmas... turducken of podcast content, watching the Digimon movie with you guys and Nolan and the kitten who is currently biting my finger right now.
We're also inside of one another and a third party.
Yeah.
So it's a double turducken. A turfucken.
Housekeeping, we will be watching the movie and giving commentary, and then we will be doing a little breakdown after the fact. The commentary will be exclusive to the Patreon indefinitely, but only for $1, so if you want to join us on that, go do that, and there will be instructions on how to sync up the movie with the audio and all that, so you can watch along with us. And also to get you up to speed on the show, the next two episodes of the main podcast will be available on Patreon for free if you want to go ahead and listen to those early. But if not, then you can just go ahead and watch the movie. It doesn't really matter, but it kind of does if you want it to and want to cram the third section of the film into... the continuity that it doesn't really fit in anyway. All that said, hey Nolan, how you doing, buddy?
Oh my God, so good. I've completely become oversaturated with the Christmas spirit. Me and the Christmas spirit are now one. When I close my eyes, I just see tinsel and holiday cheer as far as the eye can see, out into the pitiless void, just as far as the imagination and dreams and nightmares can take you. It's all just, good cheer. Holiday wishes, buzzword.
What's your favorite Christmas song, movie,
what's
another Christmassy category?
Disappointment.
Yeah, song, movie, and disappointment. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. My favorite Christmas song, I don't know, Jingle Bell Rock got me this year.
It's a bop.
Yeah, I just had to learn it for the recital, and we ended up not playing it because that student didn't show up. But, do you know the Bare Naked Ladies version of God Rest You Merry Gentlemen?
No, I've heard the Manchester version, which is slaps, but I've not heard the B&L version.
That's the best one, the Manchester one.
Yeah.
But the B&L one's like fun and like boppy, and it does some neat harmony stuff. That's probably my answer. What was the next one?
Movie. Yeah.
I really liked Elf as a kid. That hit me right in the right like age range for that to be the perfect Christmas movie for me. Now I don't really like it, but... it's okay. I would say my favorite like Christmas movie all time. I'm not gonna be a bitch and say like Die Hard.
Right.
I do think there are some like almost Christmas movies that like move into that space for me.
Mm-hmm.
Like Blade.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But no, I'd say like straight up Christmas movies. It's a Wonderful Life. I think that's probably. My favorite one.
Okay.
I think that one is just steeped in a bunch of like really, really cool symbolism. And if you sort of, you know, suck the whiteness out of it and just get down to the core, I think it's a pretty universal message about gratitude and not allowing the, presumptions and desires of external forces guide your dreams.
Pre-television film hit in a different way.
Yeah, it was a structuralist era.
Yeah,
as far as I'm aware, if I'm using that word correctly, structuralism is like where it's like the the like story and the function of the film is the first thing that's considered, right?
Right, I think so.
And then formalism is like the techniques and the...
Yeah.
Okay. So yeah, I would say like, yeah.
And disappointment.
Disappointment.
What was your favorite disappointment?
My favorite disappointment. Let's see. I remember there being like one kind of bad one. I can't remember what I wanted that I didn't get, but for me to just say, you know, one time I didn't get what I wanted for Christmas is not a story. So let me just make something up. Bionicles. I wanted the a Bionicle set that I didn't get it, and so I waited until my dad fell asleep and dropped a brick on his teeth. No, I'm just kidding. I'd never do that. You gotta face a man if you're gonna fight. you can see the effect my dad had on me in two different directions. And that sort of insane diatribe. I think it was some kind of something like that. I was at that age where I wanted like an action figure set or something related to whatever piece of media I was super into.
Right.
I do remember wanting a Digimon, a D3 like walker thing.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, was like a Tamagotchi basically, but it was Digimon themed, and you could like fight them if you like synced them up.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was the shit. That was the coolest fucking thing ever. And I was just like, just buy me like three of those and you'll never have to talk to me again. All right.
I don't even need friends. I can do it myself.
Yeah.
It's way cheaper than buying me two Game Boys and two versions of, like, Pokemon.
Yeah, for sure. I got to play most of the video games growing up as, like, hand-me-downs from Truman and Ethan, who didn't appreciate them. Yeah.
Yeah.
They picked up Porky Pig's Nightmare. Was it Haunted Nightmare?
Yeah.
And they just set it aside... forgetting the gem that it was. No, that's the first game I ever broke a controller while I was playing it.
Yeah, it was frustrating. My playthrough of that last Halloween, Thanksgiving, whatever it was, I did that long playthrough on the Indie Carnival channel that you can go watch on YouTube, was the first time I ever beat that. I've had that game pretty much my entire life.
That's
the first time
it.
I've ever beaten that. I tried to play Bart's Nightmare recently.
Oh yeah.
I could not get through one fucking level of that game. That game was so fucking...
Dude.
And I tried to do the Home Alone game for the Super Nintendo.
Dude, that one I spent countless hours. I don't think I've been past the second screen on that one.
Yeah, same. And it's like you got three lives.
It's punishing.
You're fucked. There's no like password system. There's no save or anything. It's just you got three lives to get through the entire fucking game.
Was that at an arcade port? Because
it feels like it.
If it wasn't, whoever decided not to fucking play test that, and was just like, yeah, no continues, three lives. That's always it's bullshit. It's trying to make your game longer than it is, you know, just by making 90% of it impossible to see.
Yeah. Yeah, it's an archaic relic of the arcade era.
Mm-hmm.
And
the Wild West.
Yeah, for sure. Since you didn't ask for me, okay, song, so I do enjoy, like, the thing I like about Christmas music broadly is it's the one time of year where you hear jazz on the radio.
Yeah, but it's always like white guy jazz.
Oh, for sure.
It's like the weather outside is weather. you better grab a sweater, go and fuck your face.
God bless the Caucasian race. but honestly, I would say my favorite song is "Oh Holy Night," but it has to include the third verse, which Manchester's version does. So that ranks as a top. As a top contender for me.
What's the third verse?
Truly he taught us all to love another. His love is law and his gospel is peace. Chain shall he break, for the slave is our brother, and in his name all oppression will cease. That, like...
Oh, that's the shit.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a great verse.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's a bar.
That's absolutely a bar and a bop. Like,
that fucks.
Oh, it fucks so hard. Yeah, the song was written by an abolitionist in, like, the 1790s.
Oh, shit. I guess I thought it was an older hymn or, like, a... And now that I think about it, that melody is very, like, folk traditional.
Yeah. But as, of course, that in almost every version of the song, that verse is removed. And so it's stripped of its, like, its actual, like, yeah, its actual
its
meaning.
Yeah.
Its thesis, yeah. Like, its actual thesis of, like, salvation and the hope of Christ as a social liberatory function and not just individual cope with mortality.
Yeah.
So that's it for me, so long as it has that verse in it. Movie-wise, it's partially because I just watched it, but also because I just watched it because I love it so much. Muppet Christmas Carol.
That's a good one. That's a really good one. Oh, the fucking Disney Christmas Carol is really good, too.
Yeah, it's... the one with...
Scrooge, and then Goofy is Jacob Marley.
Yeah, I enjoy that one. It's weird. It's so short, but it feels...
It does feel like an eternity.
Yeah, like it doesn't have enough levity in it. Like it's...
It is dark as shit.
Yeah.
My mom had to cut out parts of it from the VHS.
Mm-hmm.
I can't believe she did that now that I think about it. That was very nice of her. But the scene where with the knocker where it turns into Jacob Marley's face.
Yeah.
Yeah, that scared me a lot as a very small child.
But I think that the Muppet version does probably the best job of humanizing Scrooge in a way that doesn't like remove his inhumanity,
yeah,
but also makes it believable when he finds his humanity in the end, and the ghosts don't really act as punishment and don't like get off on his,
yeah,
like they're trying to guide him in a direction.
The only one that does that in the Disney one is the final
with
Sam the cat. Is that Sam?
It's fucking, isn't it Pete?
No, it's Pete the cat. Sorry.
Yeah.
I just got his name fucked up.
I didn't realize that he was a cat, actually. Is he a cat? Because I thought that he and PJ they're from like Goofy thing. I thought they were dogs.
No, they're I think it's Pete the cat. I don't know, to be honest.
But
Pizza Cat?
Pizza Cat.
Yeah.
Pizza Dog. I've been rewatching Hawkeye, which is also really, really nice. Christmas. Okay, are Pete and PJ cats?
We're deep in the... we're searching our database of Christmas cheer to figure out... Who, in fact, play the Ghost of Christmas Future in the...
Okay, it is interesting. He is a cat. I always thought that he was like a bulldog or something.
I never thought he looked like a cat, but I just remember the phrase, Pete the Cat.
Right.
So, yeah. And I thought it was Sam originally, so shows what the fuck I know.
And, but yeah, I can go off on that. I don't think that... I hate most Christmas movies because most of them are saccharine and try to make a point, but the point is always, like, shallow. Like, be yourself or, like...
Oh, man.
Anti-consumerism in a consumerist package.
Yeah, exactly. Like, Jingle All the Way, that is, like, that movie is like an entirely just an advertisement for all of the consumerist aspects of Christmas other than buying a toy for your kid.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. And it's a lack. It's like an antithesis.
Yeah.
Like, okay, don't Christmas isn't this, but it doesn't like ever give an answer to what it should be. And I think that Christmas Carol as a story broadly does that a lot better.
Yeah. Jingle All the Way, I think, is just trying to like say be with your family instead of focusing on work. But
right.
Again, that's a very like privileged position to be in.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't tell that to fucking what's Tiny Tim's dad's name?
Bob Cratchit.
You couldn't tell that to Cratchit, you know?
Right.
Because it's like, he'd be like, yeah, that would be great.
Yeah.
Sounds like a great plan. Oh, why have I not been doing that?
Disappointment. I guess I was 13 or 14. I had already gotten, I was already playing guitar. And like the year before that, I got my Strat. That I still own, that I love, that was a great Christmas present. But I did not have an acoustic, so my parents got me a Johnson.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, my parents got me a Maestro.
Okay, you win.
1 year for, yeah. It came in a box.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, this will get you to shut up about playing the drums, right?
Appreciate it, but
yeah, same.
But still, like, and then
thanks,
I got.
Thanks, but fuck you.
Yeah, exactly. And then a couple years later, I got an Alvarez. It was a Regent or whatever. Like, it was the starter, but it was still like
it was a
decent guitar. I still have that. Actually, I need to fucking find a. I've got a busted tuning machine on it that won't crank. But other than that, that's all it needs. I need to find that. But I've still got that.
Yep, it has been zero episodes of Podmon since we mentioned guitars.
Yep. Well, it depends on what order you're listening to this. But, yeah, sorry. But, yeah, that was my Christmas. The one that comes to mind. There were probably a lot of them.
No,
but
that's great. The fucking Strat's a great gift.
Oh, yeah. Love that guitar. Like, I probably... Big believer that, like, any instrument, you don't need to spend, like, $2,000 on a kid because then it's diminishing returns because they're not going to appreciate the nuances.
Absolutely.
But you should at least spend something because you don't want someone's first instrument to fight them.
Yeah.
Like you don't want it to be like something that won't stay in tune or has horrible action.
Some of these kids that come into the fucking time on the string they're like, it's basically a toy guitar.
Right.
You know? And I'm like, how are they supposed to feel good about learning this shit or practicing?
Yeah.
When it's like, I know that guitar hurts to hold. Like,
right, exactly. Like,
the frets are probably up off of the fucking board that's probably like cutting them sometimes whenever they, you know.
Like, I can do it because I'm used to the instrument, but it's still not fun. It's still not like preferable. But if I was starting out and I could barely like press the strings down, I would give up. Like I did multiple times in my childhood because I had shitty guitars to play.
Oh, man. Yeah.
Anyway, sorry, Merry Christmas. We're going to go watch a movie now, and we'll be back to talk about it later. All right, welcome back. We just got out of the movies.
We're the kids in America. Whoa.
Whoa.
That's Ben. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's been one movie.
A manner of speaking, yeah, it has.
I would say that, like, it is pretty obvious that it's two separate narratives that are sort of grafted onto one another.
Yeah.
But in terms of like meeting expectations for a Digimon movie, I feel like this one exceeds them. It's pretty grand. I really like the scope of it. It feels very rushed in some areas, but you know, that's kind of just to be expected taking something and like condensing it into smaller medium and trying to make a coherent message out of like unrelated.
Right. I feel like the most cracks are in the third segment of the film. Like obviously all the things with like Willis being the one to create Deal Boromon and all that like connective tissue was grafted on to give it a like a through line narratively. But the first two really don't have much at all really connecting them, but I guess from like a, this is them at the very beginning of their journey, and this is the original kids after they've gone through everything. It's a nice little bookend of,
yeah,
of things.
It also like highlights the romantic relationships between the kids a little bit more than the show does.
Yeah.
The show mainly does it just for joke purposes, which
right.
is also true here, but it also is a little bit illustrative of like motivations. I would say like the main conflict is kind of like one of the stakes provided is the like relationship between Sora and Ty.
Yeah.
Which is completely sidelined in the final, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting that they go into that here as much as they do, for reasons that we will get into in this, in the season that we're watching right now regarding Sora and Ty and the will they, won't they of their. Of their relationship. Yeah, if I had to, so I guess we'll start at the first bit. Originally known as Digimon Adventure, it came out like the day before or the week before the series premiered. It was like our first
in America?
No, in Japan. This was like the OVA itself. Yeah, we have It is currently being dubbed for the first time as each individual section. That should be out sometime in this coming year, but
why haven't we gotten that yet? It seems like that would be the first thing to do with like
So Fox saw the success of the Pokemon movie and were like, we want that. We have Digimon. We want that. What do you have? And Toby's like, well, we don't really have a movie. We have just a bunch of like 30, 45-minute OVAs that have really nothing to do with each other. And Fox said, great, I've got a sewing machine. Let's stitch them together.
Yeah, the kids won't notice.
Exactly. So, yeah, the first one, Digimon Adventure, was the introduction to Digimon as an anime. And honestly, like, going from... We talked about this during the commentary, but going from, like, the Tamagotchi monster... tamer little devices to that, it honestly makes sense as a transitional piece because yeah. most of the film of that little short film is that is yeah. like so
the transformation into Agumon kind of is like the moving past a threshold,
right?
Yeah, like it's past anything that a kid could really be expected to deal with at that point. And sort of the like grandiose nature of the narrative starts to really form.
But at a like, it's a nice little crossfade because I love the little girl Kari's must be like two at this stage, maybe three, like riding a giant dinosaur,
mm-hmm.
going through the city and like just fucking shit up is. The cutest thing in the world, and I yeah. need more of that in my life. but yeah, so Ty, a Digi-Egg comes out of Ty's computer. The next day, it hatches into a Botamon, and it's, and like I said, it's typical Tamagotchi Digivice shit. They feed it, it digivolves, it poops, rinse and repeat. Until it digivolves into Agumon and jumps out the window with Kari on its back and causes some havoc until Parrotmon shows up and they fight and he digivolves again into Greymon. They fight. Parrotmon takes him down, but Ty wakes him up with Kari's whistle and Greymon wins the fight, and mm-hmm. That's that. And, of course, through all of this, another connective tissue that we have is Kari as the narrator, since she is kind of in all three segments,
yeah.
not so much in the second, and I would say that, like, So we're getting into the second segment now, which was called Our War Game. And I want to say, I can't remember when it came out in Japan, but after the first season aired. Strongest segment, I think,
yeah,
of the...
Yeah, I agree. The most coherent, has the, like, strongest, like, stakes. There's nuclear missiles that are,
right.
like, launched. It's, yeah, it takes it past, like, even just, like, the... While you're invested in, the like, the safety of the digital world...
Right.
We still see it as an abstraction and
yeah.
a separation from our, like, day-to-day lives. But, like, the having it be... Oh, there are nuclear missiles trained on our position and also just somewhere in Colorado.
Right.
Yeah, it's a fucking problem that anybody could get behind.
Also, like, we're firmly established at this point what the digital world looks like in the adventure continuity.
Yeah.
There's not much you can do to change the design and the aesthetics without breaking that. So the fact that the fight and everything takes place literally on the internet allows for some really fun set pieces.
It's a series of tubes.
Yeah, it is literally a series of tubes.
Yeah. Emails are like physical things in the...
Yeah, I wonder
bombs,
if...
Bombs, they're airstrikes for some reason.
I wonder if in the writer's meeting, like, okay, internet, what does the internet look like? Oh, it's a series of tubes, Bob.
Genius. Art director. It's a series of tubes.
So on one hand, if I have to levy a critique against the second section, it's the fact that it's really just Ty and Matt, but Izzy
yeah.
and TK are there as support.
Well,
but also I do think that in a 45 minute segment, trying to do all of that, plus you want to get to Omnimon and all of that, trying to do that with the other kids involved too would probably feel a little bit cluttered, a little bit much.
Yeah.
And we literally just had everybody teaming up to fight Piedmon, then everybody teaming up to fight Apocalypse. Like, we've seen, like, them all gang up together on the big bad. It works without them, but... I don't know, and it does a good job of, like, writing everybody out of it for the most part.
We still catch up with them. Like, we see what Joe is up to.
Right, yeah. We just don't really spend any time with them.
Or Mimi.
Yeah. Yeah, Joe and Mimi especially get the short end. At least, like, Kari has a little bit in the beginning, and then Sora has her thing with Ty, that's the running little gag there.
Every other character feels like they at least get something to do. That's sort of, I mean, Yoli and Cody are just kind of along for Davis's ride.
That's true.
And that's very rushed as well, the Davis-Willis like connection, to the point where they make it into like a physical gag.
Right.
We're just like, Davis is like open sobbing about Willis's predicament, and then just gets warped back into his normal state of mind.
So obviously it's believable that Mimi would be on vacation. It's believable that Joe would have a do not disturb on when he's taking a voluntary test at summer school. It's not as believable to me that Kari, knowing the situation, wouldn't come home from a party, and that and that Sora, which I'm not sure exactly what all... If Ty didn't tell her, oh, by the way, our Digimon... Like, the world's in danger and our Digimon are fighting. That's on him.
Yeah, they wouldn't... He couldn't get a hold of her. He never got through.
He didn't leave. He left a message for her on the, like, the fucking phone tag
call messaging
thing.
But,
like, if he didn't give her any details, that's on him. Because it's also not believable that even being mad at Ty, that Sora wouldn't get involved if... Bioman was in danger.
Yeah, for sure.
But again, it works because none of the others can really do anything anyway. It would ultimately come down to WarGreymon and Metal Garurumon, which still wasn't enough. So we got We got Omnimon out of it.
Super badass.
Super fucking badass.
Yeah, they thoughts just on the pull that. They pulled that out of their ass like they've done with most of the like power escalations.
Yeah.
Which I'm kind of into now just as a medium of doing it.
Mm-hmm.
Just like having seen so many anime where like obsession over the next transformation, the next level of power that can be achieved,
right,
is just so all consuming. Having it be just a complete contrivance, just pulling it straight out of your ass is kind of a relief. It's just it really does not matter to me, honestly. Like
right.
you could give me a couple episodes explaining the lore behind why they like go up into a ball and transform in this right. one particular scenario. I don't care. You know,
like I think that like I'm not as interested like in lore reasons or whatever, but like what you do with it narratively, if that makes sense.
If I need to suspend my disbelief to the point where I can I just have to accept that Omnimon is a thing, for Omnimon to be like the main
right.
Protagonist at the end to defeat what, Kokomon?
No, Diaboromon.
Diaboromon. Oh yeah, Omnimon. He fights. Yeah, Diaboromon. Yeah. Then yeah, I'll give you that, as long as we're not skipping over any like story beats
right.
in order for that to happen, because I don't consider that like lore to be plot. It's not the same thing.
Right, for sure. And I think that, you know, the story and like narrative and character things are, as far as Digivolution goes, are more in the end with Magnemon and Rapidmon. We'll get there. Omnimon is very much a set piece.
Yeah.
Like, he's just cool. Like, there's not really any growth from Ty and Matt that leads to it or anything like that.
Yeah,
it's just,
they're both pretty much about it. It's just there's this strange moment where they're able to just dive into the digital world and hug their they're not Ultimates, are they? What are they?
I mean, Japan they are, but Megas.
Megas.
Yeah.
To get them to be, you know, to fusion, huh?
Right. Yeah, and a fusion dance, it is a very, like, shonen moment of just, like, no character, just pure determination. Like,
yeah.
There's no lessons learned or anything like that. It's just,
I don't have a whistle.
We're going to win. How are we going to win? I don't know. By doing this thing that makes us stronger because we want to win.
Yeah, exactly. It's Ash crying on dead Pikachu at the end of the Pokemon
right.
movie. It's pretty much, you know, it's,
this hit me way harder than that, probably because I never liked
me
Pikachu.
Too. I guess Pikachu always felt a little bit like condescending. You know? Pikachu's always like you have to earn my admiration to the one person trying to save his life. Her life, their life. Whatever Pikachu is.
Right. So, yeah, they beat Omnimon. There's also a fun little running gag of Ty's mom just being just the most insane, depraved person in the kitchen throughout this entire thing. We have beef jerky shakes, spinach cookies, her first cake ever with flour that she makes in the microwave. And Izzy's eating all this down until it finally catches up with him and almost kills him.
Yeah. Ty then crashes the computer.
Right.
Was that Ty, actually, canonically? Or was it just that just happened? Because he hits the monitor. That shouldn't have done anything to the CPU.
I'm not sure. I think in like,
is it his frustration? Maybe that's like, because if the like we've established that emotions connect you to the digital world
right.
somehow.
I think that in the American, in the dub continuity, that for whatever reason, yes, Ty hitting the it could have been an all in one. No, they had a tower. Ty hitting the monitor. I mean, it could have scrambled the monitor. It wouldn't have done like a blue screen like that.
Yeah.
But him hitting the monitor could have just fucked up the monitor. But I think that that's the implication, is that Ty fucked it up.
Yeah.
But yeah, and a lot of like very late 90s, year 2000, like internet tropes.
Yeah. It's kind of a little bit of a time capsule.
Oh, for sure.
In that respect. Just every piece of computer technology is the same, like, sickly, pale, like, concrete color. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, it's just...
like
you can tell that room was actually loud as shit if you were actually in there. You know, it would have been like...
Oh, God.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah. There's no way anybody would be making phone calls.
Is there a Digimon in your house, Ty? It sounds evil.
It's a modem. Modemon.
But yeah, there's an entire, like, you're talking phone calls, like, there's an entire,
there's an operator saying.
Yeah! that was a great little bit. There's an entire, like, narrative conflict or whatever in the film where they fucking, like, they're, Dio Bormon is, or I think before he's Dio Bormon, is taking over the phone company and is calling every line, which knocks them off of the internet because it's the year 2000.
Yeah.
And there's still, like, if someone tried to make a phone call, they would disconnect you from the internet. They mm-hmm. defeat Dio Bormon by forwarding him a bunch of emails and so slowing down his connection. They have to use Izzy's password to get on the internet. As you said, it's very much a time capsule of a bygone and
thankfully
better
dead era.
I don't know.
There's something about it. I agree.
Like,
it's just
those things, frustrating as hell.
Yeah.
Don't want that back. But the the pre-consolidated internet.
Yeah.
Where, like, there were actually, like, unique websites, like, you know, your Newgrounds, your e-bombs, and even, like, your major websites. Like, I remember, like, going on to, like, foxkids.com or mm-hmm. the fucking Disney site or cartoon and playing,
yeah,
like, Flash games,
yeah,
and
shit, yeah,
all that shit. Like, that doesn't doesn't exist anymore.
That's very true. Yeah, Flash isn't even a thing anymore.
Right. So, yeah, so that's the second... second section, which leads us to the final part and the one that is least connected to the show's continuity. This one was called Hurricane Touchdown / Transcendent Evolution, the Golden Digimentals.
Oh,
which,
my God.
Digimental is the Japanese word for the
armor?
Digi eggs, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, elementals, blah, 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 blah.
Oh, shit, they are all element-based.
Yeah.
Well, sure, yeah.
So, this one catches us up to present day, where TK and Kari are in New York visiting Mimi, and they meet this kid Willis, who is being chased by a giant fuzzy monster in blackface
named Cocomon.
Named Cocomon.
That's very very funny. We got a lot of mileage out of that one.
Yeah, for sure. And he has a second Digimon named Terriermon, who is just the cutest little
bunny. Just this little green-tinted rabbit with horns.
Yeah.
And, you know, the posture of, like, a toddler.
He's perfect and can do no wrong. And so they let Davis and Yoli and Cody know about it, so they come to... They're all coming to America. And they find Willis, and they find Cocomon, or Cocomon finds them. There's some...
Yeah, Cocomon is preceded by a wind, which I, in my head canon, is like the smell that he put on.
Yeah,
like he
yeah.
just the smell of shoe polish just in the air.
Yeah, so in this, the idea is, like I said, Willis created Dio Boromon, and a virus infected it. It got beaten by Omnimon, but the virus escaped into the real world somehow and infected Kokomon. So the digital mist that you see all the time is the virus that's attacking him. But obviously, in the original, those had nothing to do with each other.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, and we'll find out whenever the dub comes out. I could watch the sub again, but I'll wait a couple of months. Wondering what that actually is supposed to be in the original conception of this film. But questions for later. They fight Kokomon a couple of times. He digivolves a couple of times. And he even in like obviously the internet set piece from the last section is really fucking cool and like aesthetically creative. But even like the real world fights that we get both in the first section and here at the end are really fun. And we didn't touch on this in the first bit, but it was really cool to get like a proper kaiju fight.
Yeah.
In Digimon. Because even when you have like a couple of giant Digimon going against each other, it's very rare that they make physical contact with each other and that there's any weight to the fight.
Exactly. They always do their stock footage attacks.
Right.
Attacking each other from completely, sometimes unrelated angles.
Yeah, for sure. But Greymon and Parrotmon just going at each other and just fucking up a city block. It feels larger, and rightfully so. It's a film, but it feels larger than it typically is in these in those kinds of fights. And there's that again here, like Cherubimon is the name of his mega form.
Yeah.
Is just knocking everybody around. Like you feel the weight of his arms flailing and hitting them, or them getting hit with his fucking little pellets that he shoots out and everything.
The watermelon seeds.
Yeah, his watermelon seeds from his blackface era. So he's just fucking them up, and he's about to kill all of them when TK and Kari finally show up with Angemon and Angewomon. And then Cherubimon makes time go backwards. He's been saying this whole time to go back to the beginning. Willis thought that meant go back to Colorado where they grew up, but he really meant to go back in time somehow. Magic demon powers, don't worry about it. And so everybody gets turned back into children. Davis's personality finally fits him. And Angemon and Angewomon
just show up.
They just fucking were like, we should digivolve to our mega forms to unleash the golden digi eggs.
Yeah.
First of all,
what?
How? Yeah. First of all, what?
What
first
are
of
those?
All, how? And what?
Yeah.
We
get precious little screen time of the mega evolutions as well.
Yeah. Also, don't you think that, okay, so if a regular armor is roughly analogous to a champion,
shouldn't the golden armors be ultimates instead of megas?
Yeah, pretty much that's what I'm getting at. But even so, like, you're holy. This thing is clearly fucking evil. It's a corrupted holy Digimon because we see his holy mega form at the end when he's purified.
Yeah.
But you have a type advantage against this guy and your fucking megas. Why don't you do something? Like,
no, they have to unlock the eggs.
Yeah. Like, you could have at least had them like fight him a little bit, like, oh, nope. This is a job for the golden armor Digimon. We can't do anything for some reason.
We have to turn the other cheek.
Right, yeah. We are too righteous. So yeah, they digivolve into Seraphimon and Magnadramon, Okay, so I'll start with Magnadramon. It's a giant, fluffy pink dragon.
Yeah.
First of all, how do you not love that? Second of all,
What is it called? The thing from Neverending Story. That's what it looks
oh,
like.
Oh yeah, for sure. But also,
Sky Dog, something like that.
Nothing encapsulates just the pure asshat randomness of Digimon more than Gatomon's Digivolution line.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It makes no sense and is perfect. Fucking puppy, cat, sexy angel, dragon.
Yeah.
Like, just... All
the four stages of development in Japan.
Right? Yeah. Gatomon also has an angel mega, but I refuse to acknowledge her because it's just not as good. Like, Patamon's line is entirely angel. That's fine. He can stick with that.
Yeah.
But Gatomon is just unhinged and it's perfect. How do you feel about we don't see him for more than 3 seconds, but how do you feel about Seraphimon?
I think he's pretty cool. He looks like he's from Warhammer 40K.
Yeah, I get that.
He looks like a Supermarine from Warhammer 40K.
They unleash the golden digi eggs. Vmon and Terriermon digivolves to Magnemon and Rapidmon, respectively. They get themselves eaten. They destroy the virus inside of Terubimon. And he's free. Like I said, I don't remember what happens. That all is consistent. But like what happens after that, I don't remember from the OVA. I don't think it is as cheerful and happy an ending as this one is of like... Kokomon is reborn and
yeah.
He digivolves back to his grotesque blackface form and dances to
All-Star. Oh, man. Yeah, I think they really just wanted to soften the landing
for sure.
As much as possible because American children can't deal with tragedy.
Oh, God, no. No.
Man.
But yeah, that's...
That's the Digimon movie.
That's the Digimon movie.
Yep.
So I was right. The Digimon movie predates Shrek by a year.
Whoa.
So this was like the first entrance of All-Star as like a cultural mimetic point.
Okay. And they also used The Impression That I Get, which is one of my favorite ska songs.
We didn't touch on that, but there's some absolute bops in this this soundtrack.
You would leave skanking from the theater.
Oh, 100%, yeah. This gave the most obnoxious people you've ever met their musical aesthetic.
Checkered Vans. That's what these are all about.
One of the kids needed a checkered Digivice.
Yeah,
and a fedora.
My God. Yeah.
Or just a white and black one.
Honestly, Kenji should have been like a ska revival kid.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
So,
small vest, like a short tie, white button up.
So
fedora.
That brings us to the end of the film. Let's see. What can we? I guess. Do we want to, typically when we're watching Digimon, we have a few things that we do. This movie is full of quotes. I don't know if you wrote down
things. I didn't write anything down this time.
But yeah, we listen to the commentary. We comment on a lot of the, jokes per minute are really solid. And most of them actually land. Like it actually has a... its own internal sense of humor in this film. I guess we have three Antagamon that we can rank.
Let's do it. We got Parrotmon. Mm-hmm. Is that where we're starting? Parrotmon, I love that it's so atypical of like a monster variant, because Paramon just feels like another Digimon that you would run into in the wild.
Mm-hmm.
It's not particularly threatening,
right?
But it's just so surreal and like sort of uncanny valley of it just being like an oversized version of a typically small bird,
right?
And you know, because it could have been like an eagle or a hawk or any like the more like typically intimidating birds.
Birds of prey kind of thing.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But instead it feels exotic and strange, and it's just a very cinematic way to have that fight go down.
For sure. Certainly with season two, all three of these would be top of the list compared to anything we've gotten so far.
For sure,
and I would say they'd be pretty high up in season one. So within the film itself, where would you...
Rank the three of them?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say then that... I think that... I would have Paramon probably be third.
Yeah,
and
I would agree.
And second, I would say, is Kokomon, and one I would put Diaboromon.
Yeah, I certainly would agree that Paramon is definitely third. I can see an argument for Kokomon
I think that
beating out Diaboromon, but I can also like see it the other way. I feel like as far as a threat, Diaboromon felt heavier. As far as like having some connection to anything going on, Kokomon feels heavier. So I guess it depends on which criteria you're prioritizing.
So, I mean, my only issue with that not hitting as hard for me is that the third section was by far the most, like, rushed of the three. And so we don't get to see a lot of the, like, actual, like, in-media relationship between Willis and Kokomon.
Right.
It's just something that is referred to off-screen. The first time we see Kokomon, he's already fucked up and weird.
Yeah, for sure.
And we're just kind of like living in that reality. It just feels like I didn't spend enough time personally with Kokomon to feel the interpersonal conflict. And it's also a pretty good consolation prize to be hanging out with Terriermon.
Yeah, for sure.
You know,
like
kid died.
And for the three sections of the film, I'll go ahead and say it. Like, we've kind of brushed on it a little bit. I think we'll probably both agree that the third section is the weakest, even though it has some fun. It has some fun pieces. It has nice little road movie elements.
It has the most additional information about the sort of the world that they live in. But it's the most rushed and just... It suffers because of it.
The first two, they absolutely take place in continuity because we've had the first bit referenced before, and we'll have the other bit referenced later on in this season. And they feel like they matter.
Yeah.
The third bit, you can.
Is Willis ever appear in anything else ever?
He's mentioned in the dub, but I don't think he ever shows up.
Jesus Christ!
Anything. Yeah, like the third bit, you can just wipe your hands of, and it never be an issue.
Does somebody have a Terriermon in?
Someone has a Terriermon in a. Well, I'll just go ahead and say it. Next season, the one I'm really looking forward to getting to.
Yeah.
One of the mains has a Terriermon.
Yeah.
And that's the Terriermon. Like, I love this Terriermon too, but that is the Terriermon that I would die on a cross for. not that he needs it because he's perfect. So the third bit, it's fun, but it has the most issues. It is the most disposable. Honestly, in the Japanese version of the Digimon Adventure OVA, there's an entire thing with like Tai's dad and having a drinking problem.
Oh,
they got cut out of the.
That's why he's not around.
Yeah, they got cut out of the movie. And I can't remember what all got cut out of our war game. I think it's pretty consistent, but I feel like, they needed to pad the runtime with that Angela Anaconda bit at the beginning.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I won't even go into that. But also, I guess they wanted a three-act structure to the film. But honestly, I think the film, if they could have stretched out the first and middle bit without the third, would have probably been stronger narratively without having to tack on that third bit to give it a more runtime and be a three plot or a three arc structure.
I was thinking about that, and I think that is just a sort of a, you know, bottom line decision, because then they just have a third OVA that they can't do anything with, and that's going to seem like a sunk cost to them, or seem like a they're not using their whole, you know.
Right. Which is a shame, because, and we'll probably get there if we can find the dub. It only, so there was another, there's been a bunch of Digimon OVAs, but the next OVA to come out was The Revenge of Deoboromon.
Oh, cool.
Which takes place after the end of season two. And that may have felt a little bit, and I don't think it had come out in Japan at this point, and that may have felt a little bit rushed to go like straight to that, but still would have felt more connected naturally to what we got in the middle bit. Now it's, so again, third, bottom, it's hard for me to rank the other two. Typically, I would definitely say our War Game is the middle bit is my favorite, but I really enjoyed this watch through from the perspective of a monster tamer Tamagotchi film.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed the first bit a lot in this watch through.
I think if you were going to show somebody their first piece of Digimon, you could do well to use that first OVA.
I certainly would not show someone the middle section as their first bit. That like all the weight of it really comes from having watched 54 or now like 60 something episodes.
Yeah. It would be hard to glean what the relationship between all the characters is without having that.
It's kind of like
in the background.
It's kind of like if the first thing, if someone has no relationship to the Dragon Ball franchise at all, and the first thing you show them is the Super Saiyan transformation.
Yeah, that'd be weird.
It's like, okay, that's really fucking cool looking, but who is that? Who is that bald guy?
Who's that bald guy?
Who's that bald guy? And what the fuck is going on here? Why is the sky green?
Why doesn't anybody just wish for hair?
Right. But
is it
being someone
lifting,
being someone who has seen the show and appreciates like this payoff of all the things. Where are you? Because I'm in a moment of conflict with this, and I'll get into it. Where are you between the first two bits?
I thought that they work very well in tandem with each other.
For sure.
I think that the first one, although it is, I think, the most charming of all of the scenarios by far, gets me the most invested in the characters presented. Like, the sense of worry you feel for Ty and Kari as being very small children dealing with something that's way above their ability to handle is pretty instantaneously grabbing. But I would say that the second portion is actually my favorite, just because I found myself the most invested in the conflict at hand and
agreed,
like kind of intrigued by technology now that is way out of date, but just sort of like the mystery of that time period was the most like alive in that second portion.
Yeah.
And just like the scope of like having all these like shots of people around the world sort of taking time to like observe this crazy event that's happening digitally and in a material sense at the same time.
Right.
It's just like, I don't know, it just has a bigger scope to me than any of the other portions.
I agree. There's a part of me that A, thinks that the more like slice of life nature of the first bit makes it a little bit more like cohesive and coherent than the second. And I also like, after having so many episodes of the issue being fighting to save the world, I enjoy the slice of life thing. But I agree certainly that the conflict is the most visceral in the middle section. Like, and beautiful set pieces, get a cool new digivolution. I think at the moment my answer is the first one, but that's this watch through 99,000 of the other 99,001 times I've watched this movie. It would be our war game that would win out for me. Which ultimately comes down to, as cool as the kaiju fight was with Greymon and Parrotmon, Omnimon versus Deobormon felt, it didn't feel like it had as much weight, but it felt more cinematic.
It did. It was more of like sometimes the best fights aren't the ones where they cross swords a million times. It just happens in like an instant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Obi-Wan versus Darth Maul in Rebels is my favorite lightsaber fight. And it is literally just like an instantaneous, they draw, they look at each other for a moment, and then Obi-Wan goes into I think Qui-Gon's pose, and Darth Maul's like, oh, I know what this is, and then Obi-Wan switches poses and just takes him down in one hit. It's very like Kurosawa or whatever, like it's very like very, very quick and swift. I enjoy, like, yeah, the spectacle is fun a lot of times too, but just having those just like quick, decisive actions sticks with me a lot more in most cases. And just like all the millions of Deobormon populating the screen, and so like blacking it out, and all the things that just add up to this beautiful cinematic moment with Omnimon, when Omnimon first shows up. And like I said, it's the first bit has more weight, but and I would certainly like to see more of that in Digimon. But that fight, I watching it now, I am transported back to being a 9 or 10 year old,
yeah,
and seeing this movie in the theaters for the first time. And just, if I wasn't already into, which I was, but if I wasn't already into Digimon, this would have been the moment that like crystallized it as like a childhood obsession of mine. But yeah, so that's the Digimon movie. Thank you guys for hanging out with us. What do you want to do? What do you want to do next? We may get something for January, but we should at least try to do something for Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
What's a show or movie or something? We've got a lot of things on the list that we've talked about, but
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
That'd be a good one. Let's see. Does anything fit the Valentine's theme?
What did we do last year for Valentine's? Was that Mega Man or?
Yeah, that was it's probably on brand. No, I think Mega Man was a while ago, wasn't it? Or no. We did. Yeah. I don't know.
Trying to figure out where the fucking. Okay, got our.
Let's watch the Twilight series.
Let's see. We've done Team and. Have we done TMNT?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay. I thought so. Yeah, we did. Okay. Street Sharks.
Holy shit.
Sonic X, Jackie Chan Adventures, Sam & Max, Cubics.
Ooh, Sam & Max would fit the Valentine's thing.
Okay. Actually, I think these are shows that we talked about actually before we decided on Digimon that we might watch.
Which we should absolutely watch, Sam and Max, just in general.
Okay, here we go. Pokemon bonus episodes.
Sam and Max, freelance police.
Yeah. Okay, so Metabots was Valentine's. Which, by the way, if you want to go listen to us talk about the whole first season of Metabots, it is here on the feed. Sometime next year, we will get back to finishing that. Let's see, Jackie Chan Adventures, Flint the Time Detective.
Oh, shit. Yeah, dude. Redwall would be cool.
Gekider, Beast Wars, or Beast Machines. We did that. Yay. Yu-Gi-Oh! Monster. Oh, yeah, that was, yeah.
That's a really good one.
Cyborg 009, Yu Yu Hakusho, Cowboy Bebop, Big O, and Big other other things. So what feels the most Valentine to you?
Of this list?
Of this list, yeah.
I don't know if any of them do. Beast Wars?
yeah, that's... We'll figure it out. But again, thank you. Merry Christmas, and be sure to join us back here next week for episode... I believe you'll be on episode 10 of Digimon Adventure or Podmon Adventure 02. I'm going to go home and eat some Christmas food and drink hot chocolate with peppermint schnapps and rum in it. And...
I'm gonna have a Christmas goose.
wondering the implications. Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Goodbye.